Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. A very quick intro. Thanks to everyone who's part of Device Talks Minnesota. Thanks to our speakers, our sponsors, and our attendees. It was a magical day, really was, and we're very grateful. As I said, I think previously on this podcast and on stage for certain, it took us a while to get back to Minnesota for this reason and that, but it was worth the wait. I think these things happen for a reason. And if I had to wait 5 years to experience what I did on Wednesday, I would do it again and again and again. But you won't have to wait another 5 years. We're working on Device Talks Minnesota for 2026 already. I don't want to give you the precise dates yet because I don't have them, but it will be bigger. And if possible, better. We'll do our best to make it better, but it's going to be hard to top. So in this episode, we'll have Chris Neumarker, Kayleen Brown, and I will we'll recap our highlights. And then Chris Neumarker sat down with Christian Mazzi, the CEO of Corsum, which is working on a new surgical heart valve. So thanks to Chris for leading that conversation. And this entire episode will be sponsored by Device Talks Minnesota. I am working on Device Talks West. We'll be there October 15th and 16th, but I'll save you any more plugging until later. But of course, go to west.devicetalks.com. If you're out west and you want to experience Device Talks for yourself, that's a great event as well. One I'm looking forward to putting together. The agenda looks fantastic. So with that, finally, join us on Tuesday. We've got a Device Talks Tuesday coming up with our good friends from TCAN, and I'll be leading that up. So go to devicetalks.com to register for that. All right, folks, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Woo-hoo! All right. Hey, everybody. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We're rolling right into a conversation with a very interesting person, our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. Kayleen Brown.
Hey, thanks for saying I'm interesting. That's the nicest compliment of the week.
I think I'm selling you short with that one. So we had quite a week. We were at Device Talks Minnesota this week. It has returned triumphantly, I would say.
Absolutely. Fun fact, we sold out a few days before we forgot to close registration. So we ended up having around what was about 40 additional attendees who slipped in last seconds. It was. And we had this panic moment the night before, you know, how are we going to fit everybody in the space? And you came in with such a calming energy and you said, this is a very good problem to have. And let's just go in and embrace it. And boy, it was a packed house, but the energy that the packed house brought was the best.
They were really great people. It was just a good group. I don't know. There was just a lot of love in the room, and it was a very medtech-y bunch of folks, just positive and optimistic and problem solving. And there was plenty of chicken and beef to go around. So I think everyone had a good afternoon. Highlight of the day for you?
You know, I have to say, of course, I always say that the Women in MedTech breakfast, that was phenomenal, and it always is, and it grows every single year. I love the discussion group breakout. That might be my favorite part. And at the end of it, I had to, it was like the last 2 minutes from the Women in MedTech breakfast and the discussion groups, and I went back to the mic. I'm like, I'm sorry that I have to stop you, and everybody booed me. It was the best type of booing I've ever gotten in my entire life. And I was like, I know, but we have to move on to the rest of our program. So that really, I think, just shows what, and going back to your point, energy and that connection, that discussion really so important. The other, there are two highlights. I guess three. I always do that. I always ask for one and I give you more than that. But
we'll give you a couple of extra.
Yeah. So, of course, I talked about the breakfast, but the Boston Scientific Oncology panel was really, really interesting. And I opened the panel in a way that I didn't expect. And I had shared my family history uh-huh. with cancer and why I was so connected to this conversation. And Dr. Ken Stein was in the audience. And we were able to, throughout the entire discussion, keep pulling in those personal experiences from the Boston Scientific team, from our audience's experiences, and really talking about how important it is to move the research and technology forward when it does come to interventional oncology and embolism. So moving forward, the interventional oncology and embolization is so important and really exciting to see what Boston Scientific does with that and encouraging as well. And then I got to lead a conversation with Inspire Medical Systems. Uh-huh. That was really interesting because we had five panelists, which is absolutely the max when you can have five people on stage. Yep. It was a lot, but we had perspective from three separate engineers, all of which were female. Really interesting. An engineer on the hardware side, the software side, and the AI side. Then we had the VP of product development who was talking about the last 10 years of evolution of the Inspire 5. So Inspire 4 to Inspire 5. And then we had kind of the idea of commercialization and marketing. So it was this really rounded out conversation, which you don't normally get a deep dive into learning about how a technology has evolved from one iteration to another. So we got to talk through that, and that was a lot of fun.
All right, and Chris Newmarker just hopped on. We were recording this kind of at the last minute on Friday. We all just finished up on Thursday and are back at our regular days now and said, hey, let's record a quick wrap-up. So Chris Newmarker, thanks for hosting us in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, this was fantastic. I'm so pumped. Device Talks Minnesota is back.
We defined it as a triumphant return. Do you agree
yes,
with that?
Totally.
Yeah. What were your, we're sharing our highlights. I asked Kayleen for one. She gave me three. So I'll ask you for one half. So I'll get four.
I'm overachiever.
Give us a couple of highlights, Chris Newmarker.
I mean, just to start, I suspect Kayleen probably talked about the Women in MedTech Breakfast.
Yep. A little bit.
Maybe the Brooke story keynote at the end.
No, we haven't hit that one yet.
No.
That was going to be mine, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were just fantastic bookends to the conference on the day. The fact that we could just start out with just, I mean, it was great as a first thing event that was about, you know, the need to have, you know, to continue to have, you know, more diversity in our industry. But I mean, the advice from the leaders on that stage was good advice for anyone who really wants to be a leader. I mean, just the talk about, you know, fearlessness, sticking to your values, doing what's important. I think anyone who wants to make a difference, they could take those values to heart. And then to, you know, close it off with, Brooke's story from BD, she's been pretty open about that story about her sister, right?
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, yeah, I mean, just
her sister,
just,
twin sister suffered a stroke, and Brooke, just to update people who weren't there, Brooke just walked us through the process that she went through to get her sister the care, the very strong advocacy she had to get to make sure her sister had the proper care, and to her realization that a lot of the great medical devices that are being made aren't necessarily being utilized as they need to be, and ask the folks in the audience to, number one, be personal allies and supporters of friends who need their help, but also I think to find a way to make sure that patients are getting the care they need.
Yeah, I appreciate. I mean, it was an interesting closeout in a
it
way
was.
Because we had that whole day of, you know, like, look at all this amazing innovation, and then this kind of sobering reminder at the end of just how messed up U.S. healthcare is. And what struck me too was after Brooke's talk, I mean, the number of people who were chatting after that, you know, during our evening reception, like so many people had similar stories. I mean, I have some stories myself. I mean, about, you know, loved ones who've had to go interact with the healthcare system and the kind of advocacy we had to do for them. But yeah, I did appreciate that Brooke too was like telling everyone, like, hey, you know, we do have a role. I mean, we aren't, the medical device industry can't, you know, save U.S. healthcare, but, you know, the fact that these are the device industry's customers, the device industry does have, you know, solutions and data that could, could help the healthcare industry, that there really is a role that, that we can play. And that, that that was a good added sense of mission, you know, for that conference. Because, I mean, I've long said the thing that I love the most about the device industry is that it's not just like an industry or a business that it has its faults, things get messed up, but at best, it's about, you know, improving and saving people's lives. And, you know, I mean, and, you know, if people wanted to make an easy buck, they'd be, you know, going into like high tech or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to med tech because you want to make a difference.
Absolutely. No, that was definitely a highlight. And I think, as I said on stage, kind of, we all have those experiences that stay close to the surface of our hearts. And when someone else, you hear someone else sharing their story, it really brings your own experiences to the forefront. And it was a powerful way to end the day, because you're right, we spent the entire day talking about technology, and at the very end, it was a kind of a yeah, but, you know, we have to make sure this is used correctly, and used as it's designed and intended to. So it was a very real reminder for the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Any other highlights, Chris, you want to share?
Another highlight, yeah. Like maybe less of a sobering, you know, whatever. Don't want to do that. I would say, I mean, I have, I'm trying to, I have exclusively, almost mostly exclusively covered medtech for like, it's been 13 years now. And I have to say, every one of these device talk shows, I always walk away, I've learned something. I've learned something from
absolutely
from the stuff we've put together. And I know sitting, we had a Medtronic executive talking about digital twins. Fill me in. It's Friday afternoon, Tom. Who's the Medtronic executive?
Daryl Swenson. Yep.
Daryl Swenson. Yes. Thank you. I mean, that was actually. He just had a quick 20-minute talk, but you know, my gosh, I thought it was fascinating, Daryl's background in aerospace, and I did not appreciate just how much like the whole digital twin concept really came from originally from designing airplanes and rocket ships, which makes sense because they build models and they've tested out models for the decades. But it makes sense that instead of like building a big giant model of something they were going to blow up or whatever, potentially, like let's build a digital model of this and work in all the physics around it, and you know, start experimenting with what could happen. And you know, that was kind of like a really neat history. And then the fact that that has come into the device industry, and that they're doing the same thing with, you know, how does a person's heart, you know, what are all the physics around that, and if we put in something that did this instead of that, what would it do? And you know, you don't actually have to experiment on a heart to do that. You can, you know, actually like have a computer simulation that helps you really like game stuff out. And the fact that he was saying that the FDA not only is supportive of that, but it's actually benefiting companies that want to do submissions now if they're doing computer modeling. If the FDA is like, oh, you're doing computer modeling, then like they actually trust it more if you've been doing that kind of work. So that was something I mean, I knew about it a bit, but I mean, I just appreciated so much more that that's actually like a really, really cool development that we've had in our industry in recent years.
Absolutely. And fun fact, Daryl was the first speaker I booked for Device Talks Minnesota.
Fantastic.
I was trying to get him to speak at Boston because someone told me that he was the digital twin sort of guru, and he wasn't able to make it to Boston in May. And I said, well, said, you're in Minnesota, we're doing this meeting. And he said, absolutely, sign me up. So he was the first one there. I'm sorry, wow, I didn't get to meet him or see his talk. That's always one of the tragedies of these conferences, is I find all these interesting people, invite them to speak, and then I honestly don't even get, like, I didn't get to meet him, a few other folks. And I was like, dang, like, that was one of the reasons to have this conference. But
I'm literally getting LinkedIn messages today, like, so like, you and Tom and everybody, Kayleen, did a great job. I'm sorry, did I have a chance to say hello? Like, great show. Like, yeah. I'll catch you again. It's like, we're getting things done, but my gosh, like it was, yeah, there was so much there. Just it was just so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. No, so for me, I mean, we have a lot of, for my highlights, a lot of great content. The IVO panel we opened up with was really strong. People asked, you know, how did you get all three companies up on stage, Boston Scientific, Fastwave, and AVS. The robo discussion, they were all great conversations. For me, though, I think the highlight was the venue itself. I think the McNamara Alumni Center just had a magic to it. You know, you took a picture of a speaker and they just looked amazing, especially in the Heritage Room. Like, it just, I don't know, just it brought so much more to the conversation. So I was grateful, as I said on stage, it took us 5 years to get back to Minnesota. I'm not a spiritual man by conventional means, but I do believe things happen for a reason, and I couldn't stand on that stage and look at that crowd and believe that we were meant to wait this long to be back, because we came back, I think, in a lot stronger than we left it. And I think it's a really great foundation for us to build on. And another highlight was the baseball game the next day, Chris. I didn't end up emailing all the participants. It was kind of more of a speakeasy, word of mouth sort of thing. We had a comfortable group of folks there. The time flew. I mean, the Twins got their butts kicked, and I looked up, and I was like, it was like 5-1. Then I looked up, and I was like, when did it become like 11-1? It's like, what the hell's going on?
It's nice we had some good conversation with a good group of people, so they wouldn't have to watch that butt kicking of a baseball game. Come on, Minnesota.
The highlight, I guess, for me was just the MedTech folks themselves.
Yeah, totally.
Because with the Boston's great, West is great, but there's so much going on sometimes. You're so focused on the content and can't focus on the people. And I'm glad we had a chance to focus on the people.
When I was heading in, I found the stand that sells fried cheese curds, so you could try like a few fried cheese curds. Had to like initiate you on some more like weird Minnesota junk food. It's more of a Wisconsin thing.
You were passing it around, and then our friends from Focus went up and got their own bucket of cheese curds. They were so moved by it. So we moved some cheese curds that day, thank goodness. So.
We had one nice guy there who said, like, I like them, but I married a Wisconsinite and I eat too many of them. So, like, no, I got to skip that. Like, no.
And then we had someone else bring up, like, didn't you just do a panel on peripheral vascular disease yesterday? Dude, you're harshing our buzz. Like, stop.
You know, it's like, got another bucket of these cheese curds. We could be, like case studies on that thing or something.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, everybody, this is, it was great to be back in Minnesota. We wanted to keep this short. Any closing words, Kayleen Brown, anything you want to, promises you want to make, shots you want to call, want to throw down a gauntlet or two? Come on.
No, I'll keep it light and fresh, but I actually wanted to touch your point, your highlight about the space. I feel like the Alumni Center communicated the gravitas of the conversations in a way that we've never had before.
Well said.
So there you go. There's my gauntlet. And it really was. It was, don't tell anybody. Keep it between us and the hundreds of thousands of people listening.
Yes.
But it might have been my favorite Device Talks conference so far.
It was great.
Yeah.
I'll have to say it was great. I'm a Boston guy. Here we are. Here we go again. Boston versus Minnesota, right?
So and now, on West Coast, which is the funny thing.
Right.
So like Device Talks West, now Diff coming up in October, but we met in the middle.
We had a colleague who we were talking with who was kind of saying that she thought that it kind of like the one we did here in Minnesota kind of caught like a lot of the magic of Device Talks as it got going. It was almost like a Device Talks classic. So, and classic's always good, you know.
Yeah. I like that.
Well, we'll take that challenge and make West that much better and make Boston better than that. And then we will be back in Minnesota next spring.
Can't wait.
We're settling on the date right now. Very likely and hopefully we'll be back at the McNamara Alumni Center if we can make it work, because it was just that great. We're like, why wouldn't we keep doing this? So, all right, folks. Well, if you did not, we're not able to attend. We're sorry. But next year. Make sure you, once we have a date, make sure you circle it and get in before we sell out, because I suspect we're going to sell out of that as well. And it's nice to put a sold out sign on the website.
And thank you to the University of Minnesota for hosting us. I mean, Sky U Ma. There we go.
What he said. All right. Well, thanks again, everyone who's part of Device Talks Minnesota. Now we'll hear Chris Neumacher's interview with Christian Mazzi, the CEO of Corsum.
This is Chris Neumacher. I'm editor-in-chief of Mass Device, Megal Design Outsourcing. I'm recording this, right before Memorial Day weekend. And this week we've been having Euro PCR going on, the big structural heart conference in Europe. And you know, of course, a lot of the news that we have been getting over at Mass Device has been related to transcatheter heart valves, and transcatheter heart valves have been getting a lot of the attention in recent years when it comes for med tech for structural heart repair. But surgical valve repair still very much matters. And in fact, just at our recent Device Talks Boston show, I was lucky enough to sit down for a bit with Corsum CEO Christian Madsey, who, you know, it was actually like fascinating to discover how much innovation is taking place in that space. Corsum is used to be LivaNova's heart valve business. It was spun out in 2021 after under private equity, and Christian has been leading that business, and I'm excited to have him back today to talk some more about what's been going on in his space and all the innovations that are going on at Corsum. Christian, welcome to Device Talks Weekly.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I think let's just start out. Tell your story a little bit. I mean, where are you from? How did you, get involved in this, wild, cool area of med tech?
Yeah. So, it is a wild and cool area of med tech, and I'm so glad to be in it now. My journey to it kind of started in medicine. I was a physician. I trained in internal medicine, and then made my way, at one point had a sort of a pivot, went into business via an MBA, and initially started in consulting, actually, for one of the big strategy houses. And there I kind of learned the whole world around med tech, pharmaceuticals, biotech. Did that for about a decade, and then realized it was probably time to kind of really get into the mix and get my hands dirty and lead companies.
That's correct.
And so I started initially with your typical country head, then commercial officer, and then president, and now CEO of a new company, like you said, created in 2021, but on the back of some very solid foundations. But yeah, that's been the journey.
That's fantastic. Where are you from originally?
Yeah, that's a long answer as well. I'm actually Italian. Yeah. So I'm an Italian citizen. Yeah. I feel Italian, but I was born in South Africa. I lived in half a dozen different countries growing up, studied and trained.
I was looking
US.
At your LinkedIn page. And I was like, oh my God, he's been in Sydney. He's been,
all confusing.
Around. Yeah, but that's very cool.
But actually turns out to be a good training for a company like Corsum, which is, we're in 100 countries. And yeah. We were talking earlier, and I was just in Japan. Right before that, I was in or headed to Turkey.
Right.
I'm the U.S. based in the U.S. I'm based in Boston, as you know. And it's a good setup to kind of be in this kind of environment.
I love you were joking, and sometimes you can't tell exactly where you are. Mornings, you're like, I just got to open the hotel, fly and see. And even then, it might be a highway or something.
You never know. You never know. Exactly.
That's fantastic. I mean, of course, tell me a little bit more about it, because as you said, like, it's selling in 100 countries. Mm-hmm. I saw like facilities in multiple countries as well.
Yeah. So Corsum today, just like you said, we are a global company. We are a company that is totally dedicated to cardiac surgery. We have our footprint in our manufacturing footprint in Canada, in Italy, and in the US. We have our distribution centers in the major geographies, as you said, and we're about 850 people all over the world. So, and that of course includes our folks in manufacturing and supply chain and marketing. And we do have, of course, our commercial people in all those countries. So we're a diverse bunch of people. Yeah. We call ourselves Corsumers, and that's kind of what unifies us.
That's great. And I thought it was fun too. The heart valves that in your portfolio, it sounds like the developers over the years have been big fans of the Arthurian legend, I think.
Yes, we do have our collections of Lancelot, Percival. We do have Excalibur in development, so we'll
yeah. keep. Oh, Excalibur is in development. That's fantastic.
Yeah, there is an Excalibur in development. Absolutely,
that's
awesome.
That's gonna be the final sword you're gonna pull out of the rock. There, it's gonna be great. Yeah. So,
well, funny enough, the project to create Corsum, which you said correctly, was a carve out, was a spin out, was called Project Camelot, which was
love it. That's great. That's great. Were there any like in the PowerPoints, did you like patch in like songs from the musical or something?
We had a round table at every.
You have a round table, really? There a round table at Corsum? I love it. That's great.
There is, but there should be. That's the next thing to build. Yeah.
You know, if you did something like, do you have anything like the Medtronic Fellows program where like there's, you know, certain, and you know, maybe you could say that they're members of the round table or something. I mean, that could be.
Well, they'll all be knighted.
Yeah, you can knight them. Oh my God. They're like at home, like, why do I have a, why, dad, why do you have a, mom, why do you have a sword on the mantelpiece? Like, I'm a knight.
I'm a Corsum knight.
Corsum knight. That's very cool. I mean, and, you know, we're talking about these different names. I mean, the Percival valve. Yep. With Lancelot technology. I mean, that was just approved by the FDA. I was looking around the news releases like March, right?
That's right. Early this year.
Wow. So, I mean, so this innovation is taking place. I mean, you know, and that was one thing that struck me with our conversation at Device Talks Boston was, I mean, as I was just saying, like in this intro, I mean, on Mass Device, a lot of times we're writing a lot about transcatheter valve innovation, but I mean, one thing that really struck me speaking with you is that, you know, the and the biggest thing I walked away from was like, you know, surgical heart valve replacement still very much matters. And I look at a company like yours. I mean, there's like all kinds of innovations going on. But I mean, tell everybody here a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I think that's really goes down to the very core of why we are who we are and what we're trying to do as a mission. So if you'll allow me, I'll just quickly touch on that and then come back to specifically how we're executing on it. When we created Corsum, there was a real sense of there's a underserved, underrepresented, undervalued customer in the cardiac surgeon. And that's a really good place to build around, because if you are able to support that customer, you can really partner for the long term. And we believe that cardiac surgery and cardiac surgeons ought to and will have a role to play in the long term of treatment of patients. We will always need surgery. Now, that surgery has to evolve, has to reinvent itself, has to transform itself. And that's really the core of what we do. You know, our mission is to support the cardiac surgeon of the future. And that implies, of course, introducing a whole new set of technologies, a whole new set of approaches, a whole new set of partnerships in the service of the cardiac surgeon. So that was a kind of a long-winded intro to get to your key point, which is how does that work with transcatheter technology and everything that's happening? So what I'll say is this, you're absolutely right. The transcatheter technology has been growing in leaps and bounds, and it is a phenomenal technology. But if you actually look at the data, particularly the data that's been emerging in recent years, where we start to have multi-year, hundreds of thousands of patients, real-world evidence, I think what we're beginning to see is that in the long run, surgery does give you a better result, a more durable result. A better result in terms of outcomes. But it does take time to get there. And the price that you pay for that longer term benefit is a short term increase in morbidity and mortality. I mean, it's no secret, right? It's still surgery versus right. a transcatheter, which is a minimally invasive approach to a catheter.
Presently, what seems very attractive to me about transcatheter is this promise, like, oh, you can get a valve without having your chest open. I mean, you know, I mean, because I mean, but
and I wouldn't want my chest open no matter how good the result is. So that's what we've been working on, which is to kind of bridge that gap so that we can give the tools to the surgeons to be able to offer patients something that is more durable, has a better a lifetime expectancy, but doesn't come at the price of a open chest.
So, I mean, where are we right now with that? I mean, how do we make a heart surgery less invasive?
Yeah. So there's been a number of technologies and approaches that have been coming to the forefront, and there's a lot more to come, particularly as we see an acceleration in that area. Minimally invasive surgery is effectively the approach where you do not go through the chest, but you go through a small incisions. And that can be done either through direct visualization. So the surgeon is kind of opening up the side of the chest. It can be done endoscopically, or it can be done robotically. And we're seeing all of those technologies move forward, but we do need new tools to do that. We need new devices, and that's what we're doing. So Percival, as an example, which you brought up earlier, one of our key valves is a device that is perfectly suited for the endoscopic and robotic surgeon in the sense that it is collapsible and it doesn't require sutures. So it can be inserted through a very narrow incision, positioned in the right place around the aorta, and then expanded. And so it anchors itself without the need of any sutures. And that's something that a typical open heart surgery, you couldn't do with.
So it's like Percival itself is collapsible, that helps it enable more laparoscopic or endoscopic procedures, exactly. To get in there without opening up the chest. So how does the Lancelot tech improve on that?
So Lancelot technology is an evolution of that technology that allows for better delivery and also better hemodynamics. It's a combination of the way we shape, design, manufacture the new technology so that we do get not only the benefits of the rapid delivery, but also better hemodynamics. And as you know, in a heart valve, that is pretty much fundamental in terms of the performance.
That's great. So it was more design enhancements to improve the actual hemodynamics of the valve.
Yeah. So specifically, if we dig into Lancelot, what it is the way we shape and cut the leaflets through a precision laser technology, and the way we shape the leaflets through a zero pressure shaping. And I don't want to get too technical, but tell me, it gives you perfect symmetry of the leaflets, which in turn, as you can imagine, as they open and close, if you have perfect symmetry, you're distributing the pressure and the load across all leaflets. There's three leaflets in these valves. And it stands to reason that if you have a good distribution of all the pressures, and these valves do take a lot of pressure for a long time, it leads you to not only better dynamics, hemodynamics. So when all your leaflets open up at the same time, you get better flow, and that we can prove that. But we think in the long term, because you're putting less stress on any one given leaflet, you get better durability of the valve over time.
I mean, our podcast fans are med tech nerds, so they love this stuff. So, the testing that you do, probably opening and closing this valve extremely fast. What kind of results are you predicting that you could be getting out of these new valves?
So, for example, in the case of Lancelot, we know that we're getting roughly 18% improvement in hemodynamics and flow compared to our previous generation. And then in terms of durability, time will tell, but in our simulators, we're pushing the sort of close to a billion cycles. Close to a billion cycles is, basically a lifetime for a aortic stenosis patient.
Wow. That'd be fantastic. I mean, so basically they just get this valve once, they won't need it again.
So you're absolutely correct. The other thing that I will say about Percival with Lancelot is that if for whatever reason there is a degeneration, and we're still talking about biological tissues here, Chris, right? So biological tissues do degenerate in We do know that there are different mechanisms, including immunologically mediated mechanisms.
Right. That you do still have like porcine tissue leaflets.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, they're actually bovine.
Bovine, yeah.
And they're treated. And we do have the most advanced treatment in the industry. But ultimately, what you want as a surgeon, as a patient, is should something go wrong, you have a solution. And that's another thing about the Perceval valve is that it is almost a perfect docking station. Should you need another valve, it can be inserted inside very easily. And you can put a transcatheter technology in there. So if by any chance you need a second valve, Perceval can perfectly adapt to it.
That's fantastic. And I remember Device Talks Boston. Was it a Perceval valve or a Perceval valve with Lancelot? Let me just hold and check out really quick.
That was a Perceval valve. And you were sort of holding it and sort of showing the flexibility and the color of the stent, which is the only black stent.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, one, it's made of nitinol, which, yes. I mean, that gets everybody excited. I mean, that's just really a lot of frankly just cool things going on with that nickel titanium alloy right now. But the frame was nitinol. But yes, it was black. I mean, a lot of heart valves that we've run pictures of, on Mass Device are shiny. I mean, so this was has a proprietary coating on it, right? The carbofilm.
That's right. That's right. It's a technology that is unique to us. It was developed in-house. What effectively we do is vaporize carbon in a form that it doesn't exist in nature and deposit a very thin film. And the reason we do that, and it's not only on the Perceval stent, but it's also on some of the sutures. In many of our other products, we have roughly 30 products, you will find carbofilm almost throughout anything that is exposed to blood. And the reason we do that is because carbofilm in that configuration is one of the most inert materials. And that's good, right? Because you don't want your blood to be reacting with anything.
You're saying it was so unreactive. It's got its roots at nuclear reactor design.
That's right. So some of this technology around carbon is exactly developed out of nuclear reactor design. In fact, our campus in Italy sits in an area where almost all the companies on our campus are spin-outs of the original nuclear research that was being conducted there. So you have nuclear radiopharmaceuticals. You have, of course, us. You have a pure stent manufacturer that has this carbofilm technology. These are all spin-outs of the original nuclear design.
That's fantastic. So there's that innovation as well. And all the promise around like doing these surgeries laparoscopic, like now, of course, yeah, you've got the actual placement of the valve, but I mean, there's all kinds of other things going around that surgery, right? I mean, like with a heart valve replacement like that, they stop the heart, right?
Yes, they do.
So how do you, get in and, I mean, what are some of the challenges with getting in and doing that laparoscopically as well as supporting the heart? And I mean, how can you help out with that?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because as we think about certainly our strategy and our focus around the cardiac surgeon of the future, it's got to be more than just providing the valve or the valve placement or repair. It's got to be some of the accessories, some of the tools, some of the technologies. And so the way we help out, for example, is we have a line of tools or accessories that are supportive of the cardiac surgeon in an endoscopic or robotic environment. So it'll be things like you said, the heart needs to be stopped. In order to stop the heart, you have to clamp the aorta, right? You don't want that aorta to be open at any stage. In order for you to do that in a robotic setting, for example, you don't want instruments to be hanging out of the chest because you have a very limited access to the chest. It's these tiny little incisions that you have to get into, and you really don't want instruments poking out during that time because it reduces your real estate and access to the patient. So for example, we develop a aortic clamp, which will clamp the aorta, so it'll compress it, it'll protect it, but then it can be detached from the handle.
Wow.
So the handle kind of stays in, and once it's clamped, with a very atraumatic approach, the surgeon can move it out of the field and operate directly. And that is a great help. It doesn't sound like, I mean, it's an important technology, but that is a massive help to the surgeon because they don't have to be worrying about, I can't have perfect visualization because this instrument is sort of blocking my way.
I imagine there must have been a lot of engineering around that because, I mean, you've also got to guarantee what when you go back in there that you can unclamp it, right? I mean, you got to get the thing back attached to it and unclamp it.
Exactly. You have to be able to recover it, engage it, and then the mechanism has to be aligned so that it not only once you've engaged and caught the clamp, it releases it back and opens that safely. And of course, we need to have backups. Should anything ever fail, we also have, you know, backup systems to be able to release and remove the clamp.
I mean, one thing that something else that gets people very excited in medtech right now is surgical robotics. And, yeah. You know, just talking about that potential there. I mean, this sounds like this is, I mean, actually, like one of our, a piece of recent news we had on Mass Device was that Intuitive, you know, was putting a new official in charge of, you know, looking at robotics and cardiac surgery, which is interesting too, because that's Intuitive's roots. And then, you know, it didn't quite work out for them originally when they were trying to do it. And they, you know, moved to other laparoscopic procedures. And, you know, now they're once again looking at that. But this ability to go and do a heart valve replacement laparoscopically, I mean, how much is that playing? I mean, is this one of the things that's going to open the door to robotic surgery really coming in and working on the heart?
Absolutely. There has been a resurgence of interest in cardiac surgery from the robotics players. And Intuitive, like you correctly said, has made a return to its origin, its roots, right? But it's certainly not the only one. There's several robotics players. And it was in fact at your conference in Boston that I learned that there's a whole universe of robots, including surgical robots. And I believe something in the order of 60 or so robots dedicated to surgery, many of which are looking at cardiac surgery. So there's a real interest, and it stands to reason. I think the original move towards robotics and cardiac surgery predated the technology. The technology wasn't at the level it needs to be back then. It is today. And so what we're seeing is that there's a bet back into cardiac surgery, and that plays right into our mission. Right. Our mission is to enable the cardiac surgeon of the future that allows that surgeon to do a minimally invasive approach, which reduces the time of recovery, the pain, the speed at which a patient returns to their normal life, but has the benefit of that long-term durability, largely because you're removing the disease that otherwise would not be removed in an endoscopic or a transcatheter approach. So that plays beautifully in our strategy.
I imagine a lot of robotic companies were like, we know robotics, this is what we're developing. You know, why learn this whole other area of expertise in heart valves if there's a company that can provide it?
Absolutely. And in that context, we're in ongoing discussions and dialogues to see how we can partner and collaborate better. I don't think any robotics company would rightly say, you know, we're going to go into the implantable business. It's a completely different set of capabilities, but it's incumbent on us to make sure that the two systems talk to each other and are compatible and work well together. So we look at it from a perspective of engineering, sort of product engineering and development. We also look at it from a perspective of training and educating the surgeon of the future. And in between that, we also look at how can we deconstruct the procedure in a way that it is robotically understood, but also we can think about the future, like several steps ahead, when some of these steps can be, you know, supported or even automated by the robot.
That's fantastic. I mean, how much automation do you think we might see in like heart surgeries, like, you know, going forward? I mean, and you know, just to throw in artificial intelligence, because people can't stop talking about it. I mean,
of course.
Like,
I you mean, gotta that, talk about AI,
but, right? Yes.
How much automation is still something that we are kind of evaluation, what I'd say is this. I think there's various gradation of automation. Of course, the sort of total independence is one extreme where the robot is fundamentally independent of the operator. What I think we will see is in between is sort of enhancements or supported, robotically supported procedures. You know, I use the analogies of airplanes. Airplanes have been able to land themselves for decades if they could.
Yeah.
But you still have two pilots in the cockpit.
Right. That makes me feel better.
Right.
Especially if I was flying in a Newark or, you know, or something like that.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. They now have to be trained on operating completely independently. I think that's what we're going to see. Well, and what we're going to see is sort of this progressive support by robotics and AI coupled with AI. The reason I mentioned deconstructing the procedure is what we'll see is that procedures are several steps, and the robotics companies are great at sort of splicing up the procedure into discrete units, some of which are going to be more amenable to automation and support, others which will not. And frankly, you may not want to have them completely supported. So we are engaging as we speak in those kind of studies to effectively codify and deconstruct a procedure in a robotic way using our devices so that we begin to have at least the units of work, which we can use for training, as we discussed earlier. But in a second stage, we can begin to analyze for what is automatable and what isn't.
So exciting. So like based on what you're seeing around, I mean, if you could make just a guess, I mean, how long is it going to take? I mean, how many years before we, you know, start, you know, seeing, you know, like this becoming more of a common thing. Like I need a heart valve replaced. This is going to be a, you know, laparoscopic even robotic procedure.
So it's a great question and one that we think about in the sense that if we take the precedent of minimally invasive non-robotic surgery, the penetration of that is still limited. And the reason for that is, and we see it being, you know, in certain countries can be in north of 30 to 40% of surgery is done, you know, laparoscopically. In the United States, interestingly, that number is a lot lower. Part of that is because the training isn't set up and it is frankly more difficult for a surgeon. So you need a new set of skills. Where I think robotics can really play into is kind of, I hate to use the word, it's a bit overused, but democratizing the access to minimally invasive laparoscopic type surgery in cardiac. Once that happens, right, you will see surgeons kind of being trained straight into robotics. And then really the limiting factor is access to the technology. So it's no longer the willingness of the surgeon to unlearn open heart surgery and learn endoscopic or minimally invasive surgery, I think will move straight to robotic in the training programs. And then it's only a matter of availability of the robots. And the good news is that we're seeing some very significant investments being made in the United States and across the world, I should say. And that's encouraging in setting up these robots so that they can give access to surgeons and patients.
That's fantastic. Well, Christian, thanks a lot for coming on to Device Talks Weekly. I mean, this is really exciting.
It is. Thank you so much.
And that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly podcast. Join us on Tuesdays for our Device Talks Tuesdays with TCAN. You can go to devicetalks.com to register for that. Once again, I'm working on way past working on Device Talks West. That's happening on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Go to west.devicetalks.com to register for that. Finally, make sure you subscribe to our Device Talks podcast network so you don't miss a future episode. You can subscribe on any major podcast player. And please share this podcast episode on LinkedIn. And while you're on LinkedIn, connect with me, connect with Chris, connect with Kayleen Brown. We'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. Thanks, everyone.